from the new
Farmanet
i3/Inventive world. There's been some change up in the last couple of years. I worked with Rod back in when I worked with Inventive some years ago, and he was a great editor, and I wouldn't trade him for the world. He saved my tail many days on editing regulatory documents, so it's good to have Rod present some editing for medical writers. So that, Rod.
Thank you. And thank you for having me here today. I've got the title of this slide is Editing for the Medical Writer, which could be interpreted one of two ways. Either you're an editor and you're editing for the medical writer, or editing tips for the medical writer. So what I'm going through today is touch on both of those. As I was introduced, Rod Everhart from Farmanet i3, formerly Inventive. For those of you that are familiar with that, medical editor with Farmanet i3, I have an ELS certification and 30 plus years in the business of writing and editing and publishing, corporate communications, and for the last 6 years in the medical profession. I'd like to start off with this quote. An editor knocked at the pearly gates. Her face was scarred and cold. She stood before the man of fate for admission to the fold. "What have you done," St. Peter asked, "to gain admission here?" "I've been an editor, sir," she said, as she shed a tear. The pearly gates swung wide open. St. Peter touched the bell. "Come in," he said, "and choose your harp. You've had your share of hell." And such is the world of medical editing. I've had hellish days that gained my entrance through the pearly gates, and then I've had some great days. It just goes with the territory of being an editor. All right, for the session today, I'm going to talk about what does a medical editor do. Some of this may be obvious. Important skill sets. The relationship between the editor and the medical writer. A little something on the future direction of medical editing communication. And then after the end, a sample editing test just to see how good your editing skills are, whether you're a writer, a freelancer, or an editor. And then finally, time for questions and comments. Okay, so exactly what does a medical editor do? Well, the obvious one is the mechanics of grammar, of the English language, spelling, grammar, punctuation, finding errors in the document, helping make the scientific writing clear and precise, maybe even revising some of the language and the flow and the clarity. And these tasks of a medical editor don't necessarily apply in all cases. These are just, and it's not an all-inclusive list, but these are some of the things that many medical editors do. And if you're a medical editor here, then these will be familiar to you. Ensuring that the facts and the scientific units and all have been used correctly and consistently throughout the document, especially if you have sections written by different authors and sometimes from different countries. That's when it really becomes challenging. And then along with that, querying the writer about any problems that you see with logic, organization, and so forth. And if you're a journal editor or editing manuscripts for the journal, you want to make sure that the article conforms to the journal guidelines. We have actually gotten articles sent to us for review that apparently the writer didn't bother to go to the journal guideline to see how it should be presented, and that was our job, is to point that out. And as I said, reading through the manuscript and evaluating. And in the case probably more of the manuscript is adopting the reader's point of view but upholding the author's voice. So you're reading it as someone just getting the article, like picking up in a magazine and reading it, but making sure that the author is being consistent throughout with the way he's presenting the information. Just some of the places where medical editors work, obviously pharma companies. There's a lot of Lilly people here. That's pretty obvious. Hospitals, device companies, Roche Diagnostics. I worked for Roche at one time. Universities, med schools particularly. Government agencies, not just the FDA, but perhaps the CDC or the NIH. And of course, contract research organizations, such as Farmernet i3 or others. And then in the publishing industry, publishing the medical and scientific journals, the multitude of journals. The obvious skills that an editor should possess are knowledge of the mechanics of the English language. However, there are other skills which I think are equally as important, and one of those is tact. Because you'll be in a situation that requires a lot of tact, and you sure do not want to offend someone. You don't want to insult the writer, you don't want to insult the client, because probably they'll take their business elsewhere. So it's knowing how to be tactful in a situation. And along with that, add diplomacy. And that is handling the affairs without creating hostile environments. So getting people to communicate effectively. An example I can think of that many people from Lilly, that who are here from Lilly, will know are the onlines that you might have if you're on a team that has that. There's where tact and diplomacy comes in, because you get many people from a team that might spend 45 minutes on one little section and trying to keep the egos in check and the tempers from flaring. That's where the tact and diplomacy comes in, whether you're a medical editor or a writer or whoever it might be. Another key skill, flexibility. For us, it's all about flexibility, because timelines change frequently. I don't think I've had a project yet in the 6 years I've been with Farmernet i3/Inventive that the project has ever started with the deadline that I had and finished with the same deadline. It changes, and you have to move your schedule and be flexible, be adaptable. And a key one also is confidence. You have to have confidence in your ability as an editor, that you know the language, you know the grammar, the way to present the language, which includes a lot of the skills that we talked about earlier. And also, I think confidence includes being able to, if you disagree with something you see in a document, whether it's a regulatory document or an article or whatever, being able to explain that, to defend the change that you're suggesting to the client. That is as important, I think, as the skill set of English. And finally, under this, editors need to have humility. There's no room for big egos in medical editing, especially when you're working with clients that help to pay your salary. Being willing to admit when you've made a mistake, even if it means that a document has to be called back and redone, as can happen. So you've got to be willing to admit when you've screwed up, and also know as you're reading through or at the beginning when you're starting off with a project, knowing when to ask the right questions and not being afraid to ask questions. Finally, under humility, I think being willing to concede that even if you know you're right, but the client wants it this particular way, then you need to concede and do it the way the client wants it. So tact, diplomacy, flexibility, confidence, and humility, in addition to the mechanical elements of the English language. I can't speak for all types of medical editing, medical education, medical information. So the two types that I'll focus on today, which probably be most familiar to people in this room, would be regulatory editing, preparing the documents that go to the FDA, the EMA in Europe, or another regulatory agency, and also manuscript editing. And that is, as I mentioned earlier, the preparing the articles for submission to scientific journals. A key thing in the relationship in working with a medical writer is the relationship between the two parties. The editor and the writer, it's a partnership. Now, unfortunately, I have worked in situations where it's not viewed that way. The document's just sent to the editor, here, edit this, send it back. But I think it should be a partnership. You may have different objectives, different roles within that, but you're still partners in that project to complete it. And I think it's important that the editor should be a part of the team and be included. And there are times when, for instance, when there are team meetings, well, the editor doesn't need to be there. And there are times, but at least extend the invitation to the medical editor to come to that meeting, if, especially at the beginning when you're learning some of the initial things about the project. I mentioned that there are different roles. The medical writer, I think, is the person who gets the right information into the document. That's their responsibility to, and that would be, they're the big picture people as I see it. They know what needs to be accomplished, the ultimate goal. They are the most familiar with the science of the project. If it's a regulatory document, particularly the science of that particular area, for getting the data into the document, and whether it's doing the actual writing themselves or you, with a team, bring in the right team, but they're responsible for the data that goes in there, and the overall message, and whether that's the message of a regulatory document, which, or the message within a manuscript. There's still a message there. It may conform to a particular set of guidelines established by a journal, but the message still needs to be there. On the other hand, the medical editor is the person who presents the information in the best possible way, knowing the formatting of the document, for example. The grammar, when I say grammar, that includes the mechanics of the language. Consistency. I've had many a document that, because there are multiple writers that contribute to a document, styles are slightly different. And part of the role of the medical editor is to make the sections consistent from one to the other so that whoever's reading the document doesn't see it presented in this section one way and this section another way. Maybe the units are presented differently in one and differently in the other. So part of the job is to make consistent throughout the document. Obviously, style guides are important. Lilly has its a overall style guide for documents, and then there are team-specific or product-specific style guides, and then there are style guides outside of that. Now, if you're a medical writer, I'd like to give you next some tips on how to work with a medical editor. Some of you may already be doing this. If you are, great. I want to work with you. Time constraints are always a part of, in my world, of any project. You have so much time to get a document done. Sometimes you have a long period of time, several months. Sometimes you have several days. That's why it's important to partner with the editor to determine the level of editing needed. Is it going to be what I've got here, macro editing, which is looking at the overall document, how it flows, the content, does it make sense? Or it might just be micro editing, which all we want is a copy edit, just the mechanics, make sure everything makes sense, the commas, the periods are there, the mechanical part of the document. And then there is also, both of them are needed. One of the things that I want to mention here, especially when I work with writers, and when there are multiple writers in a document, is I'm reading through a document. If I have to stop and go, huh, I'm reading through a paragraph, and it's like I stop and I have that question mark over my face, then I know right away there's something wrong with that. And I see too often in medical writing that sentences are too long with too many phrases, too many clauses, trying to put too much information into one sentence or one paragraph. While I don't change what's there, I will query in a comment within the document to say, this doesn't make sense, or this is too long, or whatever. Consider, and I use tactfully, use words consider, or I suggest maybe you think about this, and then leave it up to the writer to decide yes or no on that. Or they may say, nah, it's good enough as it is. But ultimately, think about who the end reader might be. Could be a regulatory, someone in the regulatory agency, someone that reads the journal, or especially the journal editor, if it's of a medical journal or magazine, other scientific magazine. Always think about the end reader. So if I'm having to say, huh, there's definitely something wrong. Another thing regarding working with a medical editor, not all medical editors need to be scientists or be familiar, have a science background. There are many people on our staff, for example, that come from a publishing background, such as myself. At least have to have the ability or to learn the science, learn the medical lingo, so that you can do your job effectively. And it's more about knowing questions to ask, willing to do extra work to learn it. A good editor will know the language, know how to use style guides and put the language together and catch when there are errors. That's as important as anything, rather than knowing the, having a scientific background. Now, we also have people on our staff that not only have they worked in the publishing industry, they have a science background. That's a benefit too. So, like I say, it's not so important to be a scientist that's a medical editor. First of all, there are a lot of scientists who wouldn't want to be a medical editor. But at least the editor should have a knowledge of the terminology and be able to at least learn that particular therapeutic area, perhaps, that they want to, that they'll be editing documents in. I mentioned the levels of edit. This is an example of a checklist that we might use at PharmaNet i3. Level 1, copy edits, is the technical part of it. Looking at the styles and formatting, the way it's presented, the spell checking, looking at the TOC, more of the technical parts of the document. A level 2 edit is the copy editing part. Now, generally for us, a level 2 edit also includes a level 1. But there are times when we get strictly the people, the clients that just want to check the template language. That's important. I found times where the template language in the template wasn't included or was taken out, shouldn't have been. Looking at the abbreviations list, if there is one in the document, but it's more of the copy editing part. Now, what if you're in a situation, as some of you might be here, where you don't have the luxury of having access to a medical editor? You're the writer and you've got to edit your own work. So now I have some editing tips for medical writers. And one of the first ones is use the checklist. There's an example of a checklist. The level editing checklist could work as well. You can make your own up. If you work for Lilly, you know there are editing checklists, document checklists, whether you're editing or writing. But a checklist is vital. From my perspective, there are too many details in a document for me to remember everything needs to be done. Now, yes, there are certain things that I've done so many times I know that has to be done, but having that checklist allows me to go back and say, did I catch this? Did I not catch this? Because it stops that problem I mentioned earlier where you've got to be willing to admit you made a mistake, and maybe it's because you didn't use the checklist to catch that particular error. Make sure you have a style guide handy. It could be an internal style guide, product-oriented, or depending on the company you work for, an external, the AMA style guide. I believe there's this Council of Science Editors that has another style guide if you work outside of the actual medical area. AMA's basic grammar and usage. I don't know if any of you have ever seen that or heard of it. I believe it's included in the Essential Skills program. We have it at work. I've actually printed it off, made a little manual of it because it's more specific to actual medical writing. And it's been very helpful because it includes misuse of phrases, clauses, words that are, for example, based on when that should be used. And that's one of the phrases, clauses that are used incorrectly more often than anything I see. And the AMA Basic Grammar and Usage Guide covers a lot of, not only based on, but other things to look, and so that when you're writing and when you're editing, you have access to that. If you have a question, you can go there and see, well, that's how that should be used. It covers verbs, clauses, phrases, misused words. It's very, very helpful whether you're a medical editor or a medical writer. If you go to the AMA website, the class there, the materials are there online. Another important thing to do, if you have the time and the luxury of that, ask a colleague to read your document. You may think you've written, or I may think I've written, the best paragraph or best paper that possible. And in your head, sounds great. I've been in this situation, especially when I was in the magazine and newspaper business. And it sounded good to me. However, a second set of eyes, as many of you know, is very useful and very important. Have somebody else take a look at what's been written. Invariably, they'll find something or point out something that becomes an aha moment for you. Why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I see that? Well, it's because you're so wrapped up in what you've done and you've seen it so many times and read it so many times on your own that it makes all make sense to you. So that second set of eyes is extremely important. And there again is a bigger copy of the checklist so you get an idea of some of the things that are on, that could be on a checklist. Make your own up, or there are some available online. But it's just helpful to have that. And if you have a colleague who's going to read it, give it to your colleague and let them use the checklist. Next, let's talk about briefly about the future of medical editing, medical communications. The evolution of the editing role is being driven, I think, with many companies, pharma and otherwise, by profitability. There's a lot of competition, whether it be in the pharma industry or in other areas, that have required downsizing. I think Lilly has had their share of downsizing, especially of the editorial staff. And sometimes quality is sacrificed. I can't speak for inside Lilly so much, but sometimes in some companies, the proofreading, the editing is thrown off to a colleague who may not be their particular area. And so that the profitability can affect the quality because of downsizing. And then the requirements of technology are changing. When I first started at PharmaNet i3, for example, Inventive in those days, it was primarily paper that we worked with documents. And I believe a lot of documents were sent to the FDA and other agencies, paper. That has changed, as many of you know already. So it's changed from paper to the electronic common technical document. So then, that means that a medical editor, writers, need to be familiar with electronic publishing. And what does that require? How to make a PDF? Making sure that the end document is accurate, not only from the content, but also from the technological point of view. Because documents that go to the FDA or regulatory agencies can and have been rejected because maybe there's a link inside that doesn't work, it takes you to the wrong place, the formatting is not correct, and so they reject the document, send it back, and of course that causes delays, might cost the company money, and nobody wants that. So the more familiar an editor and a writer becomes with the technology and how that's changing, the better off to be able to do their job. Now there are still places, I think in Europe and some other countries, where paper is still the norm, but even they are moving in the direction of electronic publishing. So I think the more you can know about the electronic publishing, how it's done, even if you don't do it necessarily. For example, we have a team at work that they handle the publishing, getting the documents ready to be submitted. They don't submit the documents yet, but they're ready for that. But at least if you have a knowledge of the technical side of it, you can communicate effectively with the people have that end responsibility. So that becomes very important. So to summarize, editors do more than just look for errors. Some of the key skills we talked about are tact, diplomacy, not insulting someone, and how to get people to work together well, being flexible in timelines and meetings and whatever might be, whatever situation you might be in, and then also being humble and not being afraid to ask questions, to admit you don't know something or that you might actually learn something from, my gosh, a medical writer. And finally, another is that medical editors are partners with medical writers. Keep that in mind, that if you're not already doing that and partnering with a medical writer, if you have access to one, consider that as a possibility. Keep them in the loop. I have actually had clients that, I have clients that are really good. I get email after email with every little change, and that's great. It keeps me informed of where the project is, so I know whether I can shift priorities, be flexible, and move on to something else. And that's great. And then I have clients I work with that I might hear every now and then, and I'll send 2-3 emails, never hear a thing. And then all of a sudden I get one this is due like tomorrow. And something else that just came to mind is, in setting the goals and working with the writer and the timelines, make sure they're realistic, because you can't expect a 300-page document, whatever that document would be, to be done in a day or two, especially if it needs to be edited and finalized and then get ready to send off. It can be done, but then you have to get realistic about, okay, what are you expecting to be done in these 2 days, if you're expecting the macro editing and the micro editing, that may not happen. So keep in mind the being realistic about the goals that set in partnering with your with the medical editor. And we discussed the tips, the checklist, style guide, asking a colleague to take a look at the document, get that second set of eyes, so important. And then we touched on the future, going to electronic publishing, and how the outsourcing has changed the editing role, and in some cases, it's changed the writing role as well. Okay, that concludes the basic information of the presentation, but now I'd like to do something, or give you a little test to see if you can pass. Can you find the errors? I'll go through and tell you what the mistakes are, how it should be done, what the correct use in each case, and then you can see if you did well or not, and if there's anything you want to discuss, we could do that. In the first paragraph, the first change that I have is OCD, if you know what that obsessive compulsive disorder, can either be left OCD, because if you were writing it, it was part of a longer piece, the style usually is the first usage, expel it out, and after that, use the acronym. So it could be obsessive compulsive disorder, parentheses OCD, or you could leave it OCD. Either way would be correct in this particular case. Third line, panic disorder. There's the E and the R under order are reversed. Actually, it's O-D-R-E-R. It should be O-R-D-E-R. Next, post-traumatic. Some style guides will have you put a hyphen between that. Others might not. It just depends on what the style is of whatever organization you work for or whatever style guide you're using. The next line, PTSD, if you notice the parentheses mark is incorrect and should be changed, is discussed in capital I instead of small lowercase I. Next line, then provide specific clinical information. Clinical is spelled L-E instead of A-L. In the next line, a comprehensive summary of safety informative information. In the last line, efficacy and safety data from the clinical trial database, not trail database, are, and the reason is because data is plural, current as of 31 August, I interpret this to be 2002. And the first one, I watched her through the open door. THREW is throwing a ball, THROUGH, and between the boy and me, because between it's the object of the preposition, boy and me. Number two is, should be a comma after go inside the quotation marks, and then he whine would be lowercase h. The next line, with me and Josh. Generally, while it's technically it's the object of the preposition, it's more correct to say Josh and me. Four, Charlene offered to assist us youth workers, the object. When the caller asked for Tom, I answered, this is he. He is this. Number six, Kate and he, the subjects, are going to the World Series. Number seven, the music teacher decides whether Pedro or he sings the solo, whether Pedro sings the solo or whether he sings the solo. Number eight, consumers are manipulated with advertisements to be compulsive shoppers. Number nine, there are probably a couple of ways to do this. I chose to do, on Thursday, comma, the father explained to his toddler why the sky is blue. Otherwise, it looks like he's explaining why the sky is blue only on Thursday. Number 10, the men's room, men's apostrophe S, is to your while you are left, and the ladies is to your right. I don't think it's technically incorrect, but adding ladies' room for parallel, and it would be an apostrophe because it's the ladies' room belonging to the... After the, number 11, after the fight, the scrappy little dog retreats to lick its, I-T-S, no apostrophe. Number 12, and this I see this, number 12 is a good example of the what I see often in medical documents. Many famous people were at the game, including Jack Nicholson, Kate Hudson, and Charlie Sheen. Delete, in this case, delete the colon. Now, if you said were at the game, including the following, then you would use the colon. 13, she is a normal kind of person, just add the comma, but she has a terrible temper. And number 14, if you got to that, Excited about his promotion, Pat could not wait to celebrate, he called his wife before he left the office. And number 15, use of a hyphen, 21-year-old, hyphens between 21 and year. So how did you do? You could send a resume to us and
yeah. Actually, I did pretty well, but that first one I totally misread. I rewrote it to say, I watched her throw the door open.
That's an interpretation.
I totally read it differently. And the one with the, this is he, I put a note, I put it in the he when I said, unless he actually said, this is him.
Right.
And then you have to put it in the sick.
You just queried.
Yeah. Okay. I was probably overthinking is what I call it, but yeah.
My wife would call that, you overanalyze too much.
Right.
Anybody else have any comments on this? Want to send us your resume? I see we're a little over time. Are there any questions or comments anybody would like to ask or make? Well, thank you, everybody, for allowing me to talk with you today, and enjoy the rest of the conference.